165, which isn't in your hymnal. See, there was a minister, he was completing his sermon on temperance. And with a great emphasis as he's going along, he said, "If I had all the beer in the world, I'd take it and I'd pour it into the river." Mr. Merriman gasped. And with even greater emphasis, he said, "And if I had all the wine in the world, I'd take it and I'd pour it in the river." And as he's winding up, he finally slams his hand and he shakes his fist. And finally, "If I had all the whiskey and scotch in the world, I'd take it and I'd pour it in the river." And he went and sat down. A few minutes later, or a few seconds later, the song leader came up and shyly, laughingly says, "For our closing song, let us turn to hymn number 365. Shall we gather at the river?" So we don't have that one in ours, but... Well, most of you here probably know or might know that what I do for a living, I work with adults with disabilities. And a wide variety. I've been in the field for 27 years now and have the opportunity to work with all levels of disabilities, and it's a joy every single day. It reminds me of Mr. Gitter's sermonette about how we use our language. It's not funny, but I still find it a little humorous. Sometimes some of my most disabled people who you can't understand what they're saying, you can't understand what they're saying when they're cussing at you. It's very clear, and they know how to use the words appropriately in the sentence, which is, I find, kind of unique. But anyway, for those of you who know me very well, you know that I firmly feel with all my heart that I have the best job in the world. And I think it's a pretty big statement, but it is true. You see, every single day during the week, I have a chance to work with about 450 people with disabilities who are glad for what they have. They're extremely happy. They're eager to get to work. They want to be productive members of society. They want to be with their friends and enjoy life and have everything that we do. And by and large, they're also a very grateful group of people for what they have. And while my job is very rewarding, it's also very humbling every single day. I mean, can you imagine, Mr. Merriman mentioned his workplace, but can you imagine spending your whole day with a group of people who are actually grateful for the job they have? Can you imagine working with people that are almost ready to go, they're ready to go to work as soon as they get there? They put their lunches away, they're ready to go to work. No hanging around the water cooler, dinking around, whatever. They're there. They want to work. What about working with people every day who come to work ready to work, not hungover or not, "Oh boy, last night after Dart League, it was a long night." Can you imagine working with people like that? Or can you imagine any of your coworkers coming to you when they get their paycheck and showing you their paycheck and say, "Look, I'm paying taxes." And they're proud of that. And I go, I'm not so proud of that sometimes. It sounds like a mythical workplace, but it isn't. Or maybe I'm describing you. See, the place does exist, and I have the privilege of working with these people every day. Unfortunately, the people I've been describing have been those that I work with, not necessarily myself, as I should be every day. I want to share with you a few stories. Some of the folks that I have a chance to work with as we put this sermon in perspective as we start. The title of this is, "What About Me?" I tell you about David, first of all. David has been employed at Careers Industries for 21 years now. And every day he arrives for work. First thing he does is he makes sure that he greets all the floor supervisors and thanks them for all the work they're doing in helping him learn his job better and to have his work site ready for him. He makes the rounds, and goes around and greets everybody after he's been on the bus for an hour and a half already that morning. Recently, David's been hired to work at a retail store for 8 hours per week, and he's beyond excited. Just this year, as soon as he got his W-2, he made an appointment to get his taxes done for the first time ever. He was so proud of that. He says, he told me, I was talking to him, why are you so excited? He said, because he could do it, and he wanted, and I want to quote him here, he wanted to make sure that if he did owe the government any money, that he did his part to make sure his were paid in the most timely manner, because that's what you're supposed to do. David made about $4,000 last year. Again, a lot of the people I work with are significantly mentally disabled, and because of many of their mental deficiencies, they don't have some of the same stressors in life that we have, and that because of their limited abilities, they may have trouble understanding what's going on, and that's true in some cases. But in this case, you're wrong. David has an IQ of 110. We don't use IQs a lot anymore, but for those of you who know, 100 is considered normal. So David's IQ is a little above normal. You see, he was born with severe spina bifida that basically leaves him with basically no use of his legs. He uses two canes to walk with, kind of crutches. Most people with his condition stay in a wheelchair, but not David. He refuses to use a wheelchair. David was also, I think I mentioned this, was also born legally blind. When he got his W-2, we didn't print it in large print, so he couldn't read it. We had to read it to him. He also has extremely, for those of you who have arthritis, you can associate with this, David has extremely severe arthritis, and he's in so much pain sometimes that he can't help it when tears come to his eyes because it hurts. But he never says anything about that. Every single day of his life, David is 44 now, he's lived with this. In the last 3 years, David lost both his parents and a younger sister. In my eyes, it seems that David has a lot of reasons to be disillusioned and angry and feel resentful. He has every reason, in my mind, to be ungrateful, but he's not. Now again, think about all the things David has. Would you trade places with him? Would you be willing to trade places with David and say that you could be as thankful for what you have as David is? I'm not there yet in my life. And I can tell you without hesitation that I would not have the same grateful attitude as David does. I look at all the things that I have going for me in my life now, and I still don't even come close to having the same amount of character as David does. And that's just one of thousands and thousands of people that I've worked with. I'll tell you about John. John's a mildly mentally disabled individual. He's 52 years old. And for most of his life, he experienced beatings because he was slow. He was often called, and I hate this word, he was often called retard. And people would beat him up because he was slow and wouldn't fight back. After all this, what does he want the most? He wants to have a job. He wants to be with his friends. And he wants to do nice things for other people. Or there's Sarah, who I worked with before over in Toma. She's in her early 20s now, and she was a completely normal young lady, maybe a little hyper, I can imagine she might have been, until she fell out of a tree and landed on her head when she was 7 years old. Sarah's confined to a wheelchair now, and because of her traumatic brain injury, she's really unable to control a lot of her impulses, or many of the things she says or does. She could have benefited a lot from Mr. Gitter's sermonette, even though it might not have sunk in. But she needs help with everything she does 24 hours a day. But you hang around Sarah for a while, she's a pretty awesome person. She's a delight. Or there's Justin. He's a 24-year-old young man who in school was considered a little bit slow. You know, one of those people that, again, people picked on, the cool people picked on. But those times were the best for Justin, because when he was picked on, you see, he grew up with an abusive father, and for many, many years he endured physical, mental, and sexual abuse at the hands of that man. It finally came to an end about 2005, so about 7 years ago, when Justin's father killed Justin's sister in front of him while he was abusing her. Justin will never, ever be the same in his life without God's healing. His mind is so destroyed. He's working with us now. He's in a better place mentally. He's with some people who care for him, and he's grateful for what he's doing. You know, I gave a sermon here a while back in Omro, if you guys remember. I gave it here as well. I can't think of what it was on now. I can't remember. Anyway, somebody said, you know, that's not a real feel-good sermon. And this one might not be as well, but I want us to look at ourselves, okay? What I'm asking is that we're approaching Passover. And I want you to think about, again, the title of this sermon as I share a couple more stories. What about me? Or Doug. Doug grew up in a normal, loving family and was in advanced classes. And he was actually an excellent athlete. In early high school, Doug started to have some mental health issues, and he started to withdraw. It wasn't long before he started hallucinating, and then his mental illness from there really started to progress. His parents sought the best treatment for him, and once he started getting some treatment, things settled down for Doug a little bit. After he graduated, he was able to go off to college, and after about a year, the mental illness got worse and really flared up again, and this time there was no one there to catch him when he fell because he was out of state going to college. Doug's mental illness became so severe and uncontrolled that he put out his own eyes. That's bad. And there's a lot more that happened to Doug that I won't say here. And now he's in our care, and he's stable. And you know, he's one of the most grateful men that I've ever met for what he has in life now. And he says, if there was only a way that I could do it all over again, I could back up, that I could not have this mental illness or now be blind at my own hands. There will be. There is a way, and there will be. And the last one, and I know I'm giving you several stories, but the last one I wanted to read to you is going to be one of my participants that I had in Toma, and her name's Sandy. I want to read it to you in her own words. She actually wrote her story for me just before I left Toma. She said, hi there, my name's Sandy. I want to tell you what it's like working. This is at Handy Shop where I was. She says, I was born in Milwaukee and was extremely shy. And I would hide behind the couch when we would go visiting. I did very well in school and graduated with honors and was accepted at Carroll College and enrolled in the elementary education department. I received good grades for a while, but then I became mentally ill. I was in and out of the hospital while going to school, and that was extremely difficult, and my grades started slipping. I completed all of my education courses, except for student teaching, and then I was dropped from the department because, quote unquote, I was too unstable to teach. I had enough credits to graduate, and my social worker made sure I received a diploma in liberal arts, and I ended up in an institution after that for a year. My mental illness was pretty bad. I met a man in the institution, and we got released about the same time. We ended up getting married 2 years later. He was the love of my life. About that time, I ended up also with a job at a daycare center as an assistant for the director, who would take over for classes in the preschool and kindergarten if she was called away. I also did one-on-ones as needed. It was a CETA position, and the director did not want to rehire me because she thought that she could not afford what I deserved, thought she was overeducated. I tried to get a different job, but was unsuccessful. I learned later that she tried to locate me, but because I was irreplaceable. That man that I fell in love with died 2 days after our 4-year anniversary of cancer. It was at that point that I had to get away, and I moved to the Sparta area. I couldn't find a job, so they put me at Handy Shop, and again, that's the agency that I worked for. And the place was pretty new, and there wasn't enough work, and if we were lucky, we would work a half day. The rest of the time, we watched television. Eventually, I was put in job placement. Some of my jobs were good, some were bad. Two of my favorite jobs were working, putting together packets, etc. I'm kind of going to get to the bottom here. But she goes and talks about some of the different opportunities she's had, all the while fighting this significant mental illness. 2001, she met Larry. And Larry, despite her significant mental illness, swept her off her feet. And Larry took care of her. And Sandy became very stable. And we were able to find her community employment. And with Larry's care, making sure she took her medication, with her support, Sandy was functioning quite well until Larry passed away in 2008 of cancer. When I left Toma, Sandy was looking forward to getting out of the institution again and get her out of Mendota again and getting back into society. But if you know Sandy, she was one of those people who always was that half glasses, half full type of person. She was always that person that was thankful for whatever she had. And she didn't have a lot. Any of these stories could be you or I. I think about it every day when I'm in my business. I could be a participant there tomorrow. I could have a heart attack. I could have a stroke, get hit by a bus, and I could be requiring services. And I think about this a lot, but I look at my people and I think, do I really have any issues going on in my life? How do my issues compare to a lot of the people that I work with? How do they compare to you? I could share countless other stories to help make my point, but I hope that I have. And prompting this message, though, for me were several invitations that I've had in the last few months. I've been invited to several parties. There was that Christmas party, which I got out of. And there are a couple birthday parties, which I got away from, et cetera, et cetera. But the ones that bothered me the most that I didn't get out of were some pity parties. And I don't, for those of you who know me very well, I don't do very well with pity parties. I need to be more compassionate, and I pray every day that I become more so. But as I helped, or I was in the midst of some of these pity parties, what I kept coming back to is I'm talking to some of my staff who are having these, look around you. Look at the people you're working with every day. Do your issues compare? And I'm not here to judge how it affects one person or another, but I'm here to plant that seed in your mind so that you consider, when you're in the midst of trials and troubles, how do they compare? You know, you've always heard, you don't have to look very far to find somebody that has it worse than you. We've been taught that all along. And we know that as a people, but it's awfully easy to get into our own little feeling sorry for me. When was your last pity party? When was the last time you felt bad for yourself? Do you remember? What was it about that got you going? What set you off that time? Did you have to wait in line too long? Did somebody cut in front of you? Is your boss not as nice to you as you thought they should be? Are you in a job that you don't like? You didn't get to go to the feast site you wanted? Whatever. Think about it. Think about whatever that event was that started you on in your own little pity party. And I'm assuming that, like all humans, that most of you have had them in your life. When was your last encounter with self-pity? Maybe your spouse did something that upset you, or maybe someone wronged you and got away with it. You see, all of us have at some time in our lives been in the wrong state of mind, and it's going to happen again. That's what Satan wants. He doesn't want us to be happy. He doesn't want us to be grateful. And there'll be those times in our lives when, if we're honest with ourselves, it becomes all about me. What about me? Where do I come into the picture? When am I going to get mine? I worked harder than that guy. I've been a good person all my life. Have you ever had those feelings? You know, you think about how bad things are for yourself. You deserve that. That's not fair. What about that guy who didn't treat you with as much respect as you deserve? Why don't you have as nice a car, as nice a house, or as good of health, or as good a job as whoever? You're cheated. You should be mad about that. You shouldn't let that go. Is that God? That's not God talking to us when we get into that frame of mind, is it? And I get there myself sometimes, and I catch myself and think, what am I doing? Why am I thinking like that? Look around me in my job. What about me? You know, you should make sure that people know just how bad you have it so they'll give you the sympathy you deserve, right? Let me give you some facts about self-pity. Self-pity is a psychological state of mind of an individual in perceived adverse situations who has not accepted the situation and does not have the confidence nor the ability to cope with it. It is characterized by a person's belief that he or she is the victim of events and is therefore deserving of condolence. Self-pity is generally regarded as a negative emotion in that it doesn't generally help deal with the adverse situations. However, in a social context, it may result in either the offering of sympathy or advice. Oh, you poor thing. And self-pity, when we're having our pity party, that's what we're oftentimes looking for, somebody to pat us on the shoulder, pat us on the head, make us feel better, give us some attention. Self-pity is a way of paying attention to oneself, albeit negatively. It is a means of self-soothing or self-nurturing, is also how it's described. Social learning theorists purport that self-pity is a method for gaining attention, probably as a child, where an individual received attention, support, and nurturing while being sick or hurt. We could cuddle up to mom or dad. Let me get that. The child then grows up, though, sometimes having learned to give attention to oneself or to ask for attention from someone else, because it comes about, it's still about me. Another form I mentioned already, sometimes we're looking for is just the sympathy, someone else's sympathy when we get in these pity parties that we can have. You know, it's true, though, but we all get to feeling sorry for ourselves at times. Some people more than others. And the question, I guess, I have is why? I ask you to put yourself and ask yourself that question. Why do I sometimes just get to feeling sorry for myself? What about me? Well, the simplest way to put it is that we simply put ourselves first and get in that mind frame that it is all about me. And that's what Satan loves. He loves that. And when we get in these funks, we're not focusing on what God's Word tells us to do. We're not focusing on those things that God wants us to focus on. And the worst part about it is, it's contagious. Our attitudes are contagious. We again, bring our spouses down, our children down, those around us. You know some people that you avoid sometimes because you don't want to hear it. I don't mean that to seem mean, but they bring you down. Are you one of those people? Am I one of those people? I might be at times. I hope not. You see, everything we say, every action we take affects someone else. We don't live in a vacuum. Every action, everything we say has an affects someone else. It's either good or bad. Just this past week, I pulled a staff member into my office and helped them understand that they either need to get a better attitude or they need to get a new job. Their situation was they were full of self-pity. And they're a single mother, which I feel bad for, just had their fourth, or getting ready to have their fourth child by different dads, not married yet. And she's wanting a lot of things changed with her job so she can just get some time for herself, because it's not fair, she said, that I have to work all day and go home and take care of these four children by myself at night. And it's affecting, she's not being nice to the clients. Okay, so that's not okay. Her attitude really stinks at work. And if it affects the people with disabilities, then we have an issue, right? I feel bad for her situation. She's paying a price for bad decisions that she made. If I were in her position, maybe I'd be having the same kind of pity party. There's another person who I talked with a couple weeks ago that just for the last couple of years, it's just struck me when I say, "Good morning, how are you?" And they say, "I'm here." I finally just couldn't take it anymore. You know, I thought, that's it, you're here? And I talked to them. You know, they're always, "Oh, it's woe is me." Always negative talking about this, the weather, the boss, the company, the road, the snow. Basically everything. You probably know that type of person. Hopefully we're not that type. You know, the one who looks for pity, the one who wants people to know how stressed they are, how sick they are, how unfair life is to them. If you're sick, they're a little sicker. If you've got a migraine, they have a worse migraine, or whatever. You know what I'm talking about. You get the picture. You see, every single one of us falls into that trap at times, when instead we should be celebrating the things that we do have, and the things that God has given us, and focus our efforts on getting ready to become a part of that kingdom of priests. Focus our efforts and our thoughts on others. You see, that's what God expects of us, isn't it? He has plans for us. He has plans for us, and our job is to remain faithful to Him at all times and live a life that is appropriate and acceptable to Him. You see, the pity party lifestyle is not okay with God. It's not something God likes at all. And I'm not saying, please don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that all of us in this room may not have difficulties in our lives. We may not be going through some stressful times. I'm not saying that, because it happens and it's going to happen more. The secret is keeping everything in perspective and not overacting and not putting our utter faith, but and not overreacting and stop putting our faith in God. You see, God is ever-present, and He promises to look after us. He promises. Do you believe that with all your heart? Turn over to Isaiah, if you would, please. Isaiah chapter 40. You see, God gives us lots of promises in His Bible. And one of the most comforting ones that we can look at in many places is He promises He will never leave us. He'll never abandon us. God is ever present. And we can lean on Him. We're supposed to lean on Him. Isaiah 40, let's start in verse 28. Let's see, that's not what I want. Well, that's wrong. There we go. Okay. Isaiah 40, starting in verse 28. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is an eternal God, the creator of the whole earth. I'm reading from the NET Bible version here, so you can follow me here. He does not get tired or weary. There is no limit to His wisdom. He gives strength to those who are tired. To the ones who lack power, He gives renewed energy. Even youths get tired and weary. Even strong men clumsily stumble. But those who wait for the Lord's help find renewed strength. They rise up as if they had eagle's wings. The Lord says in verse 28, the Lord is an eternal God. See, God promises to see us through. And when why then, though, do we allow ourselves to get so discouraged at times? You know, it's like meeting somebody in the alley, you know, grimace in the alley, but you got this big guy behind you. He's going to take care of you. God's always got this. He's always there. Why, when we know that it's not acceptable to God, do we allow ourselves sometimes to be so negative and so pessimistic, and maybe even so cynical? I ask myself that. I don't have that answer yet. I'm working on it. You see, we're supposed to be hopeful. God tells us that. We're supposed to be optimistic. We're supposed to be a light unto others and to be a positive example. Isn't that right? Isn't that what it says in our Bible? We're supposed to build people up. We're supposed to be encouragers. We're told that we are ambassadors for Christ and for His way of life. We are to be grateful for what we have. What about you? Do you still think you've got it pretty bad? You just kind of feel like you get when people... I'm sorry, do you just kind of like that feeling you get when people stop and make over you, give you this sympathy? I don't mean to be rough, but again, I'm looking at myself and some of the things that I work with every day. It's not about me as much as I want it to be sometimes. Let's take a few minutes and look at some points that I hope can help us overcome hosting our own occasional little pity party. Point number one is very straightforward. It's basically, watch what you think. Watch what you think. You see, we need to focus on all the blessings God's given us instead of the obstacles that are in our way, because there are obstacles. And there are trials and there are tribulations. But we need to focus on the good things in life, the things that God's given us. I think, do I even take for granted the fact that I'm here, that God's called me to be a part of His work? He called me, called you. Does it say in your Bible that God would make your physical life perfect and that you would never have any troubles? Doesn't say that. We know it tells us several places that we're strengthened by trials. There are going to be trials in our lives, and we're going to be strengthened by them. Again, we need to focus our thoughts on God and on His coming kingdom. We need to focus our thoughts on what God expects of us now. See, here a while back, someone asked me, they said, you know, it's been a long time since you gave a sermon on prophecy. How come you don't do that? First of all, I'm a little uncomfortable because I can read what it says. We all know what the church has taught. But there's a lot of speculation as to who is what and this and that. Where I feel for myself is it's going to happen. I need to keep my eyes open and be aware, but I got to get myself ready so that I make it to God's kingdom. And so that's why a lot of my sermons, I guess, are more on what it takes for me to get ready, and hopefully might help you as well. Finally, the last part of this point one, where we need to watch what we think, is we need to start thinking about others and stop focusing on ourselves. Turn back to Philippians chapter 1, if you would. Philippians chapter 1, we'll start in verse 3. Philippians 1, verse 3, it says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Again, God called us, and he's going to see his part of the promise through. We have to see our part of the promise through. Going on in verse 7. Just as it is right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my chains and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers with me of grace. For God is my witness, how greatly I long for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. Verse 9, and this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment. Paul's telling us here that our love may abound still more. Stop thinking about self-love and thinking about loving others. Turn back to Philippians 4, verse 8. Again, thinking about, we need to think about what we're thinking about. Focus on what we're thinking about. Tells us here, verse 8 of Philippians 4, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. That's where our minds are supposed to be. Not thinking about, oh, poor me, that wasn't fair. Point number two is we need to spend time with boosters, not drainers. I personally try to avoid hanging around with people who bring me down. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe I should hang around them more, and maybe if I am in the right mood, maybe I'll teach them something good by my example. But more than likely or not, they're going to drag me down. As I stated earlier, negativity and woe is me is very contagious. We need to refuse to get sucked into those situations and any situation that does not promote godly actions, godly conversations. Maybe, most importantly, this one's hard, when people don't want to hang around you, realize that you might be the problem. I might be. I'm surely not, but I might be. You never know. We might be the problem. I've talked about this before in different trainings. I have some people at work. We have my participants again. Sometimes they have significant behaviors. And what we see sometimes is that they have significant behaviors oftentimes when a certain staff member is present. And it comes down to it, it's the staff member who's the problem, not the participant. The one causing the trouble is just not knowing how to cope with it. It's the staff member who's causing the difficulty. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. Again, we want to spend time with people who are boosters, not people who drag us down. And in Hebrews 3:13, it says, "But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." So we need to build each other up. We're so scattered. We drive for so far to get here. A lot of us, I see you once a week. And in between that time, we have our own little island of maybe our family or just ourselves. And that's not enough. We need to reach out. We need to build people up. We need to stay in contact throughout the week because somebody might be going through some things we don't know about. Isn't that part of our job? We're not just along for the ride, just taking what comes. We're supposed to be proactive. Exhort one another daily while it is called today. Point number three, you need to establish your own specific purpose and goals. Establish your own purpose and goals in your life. Now, we know what the ultimate requirements are for every single one of us. They're very, very clear in our Bibles. God has laid it out so that it's very understandable. But what about your day-to-day activities and thoughts and feelings in your sphere of influence? Do you have any goals in mind, any objectives in mind, or you just kind of take what comes and deal with it? Just... There's no question that a lot of things that happen to us in our day are beyond our control, but we also have to have a say in most of the situations that we encounter. We bring a lot of trouble on ourselves. We say the wrong things, we try to take it back, or we bring a lot of our issues on ourselves. See, do you make it a point to make a difference for someone every day? That's the proactive side I'm talking about. Not just going and trudging through life, thinking, boy, I hope God returns soon. I've about had it. We all want Christ to return soon. But there's work to do. Do you make it a point, again, to make a difference for someone else every day? Or are you focused on me? What about me? Point number four, be concerned about your reputation. Be concerned about your reputation. What would people say about you? If we go to your work site, if we go to your wherever, how would people describe you? If we were asked them to just make a list of words, adjectives that described you, what would they say? Would they have things, would words be like godly or altruistic or generous or kind or giving, thoughtful, loving, always there to help someone, friendly? They say that they're hardworking, that you're always looking out for others. Are those the words that people would use to describe you or I? Are there people in your sphere of influence who can see God working in you? It's supposed to be, right? We are Christ's ambassadors. See, I ask myself, one of the big bonuses for me in being able to hopefully speak God's word, hopefully say only things He wants me to say, is I get to concentrate on putting this together, and it really pricks my heart a lot of times because these are things that I'm having to work on. And I ask myself these tough questions, so I have to ask them of you along the way and try to help you get into the way that I'm looking at this. Would someone be able to see God working in you? Is that what you project Are you a light to those around you? And if you couldn't be described by some of those words that I used above, would they maybe use some of these others? Oh, he's kind of moody depending on the day, or if he's had his coffee, or he's grouchy, crotchety, selfish, prejudiced, a sexist, unapproachable, a do as I say, not as I do person. Would you be described as a whiner or a complainer? Somebody that makes me feel good when I walk away from them. God expects us to have a good reputation amongst good people. Point number five is, and most importantly, is we need to put God first. We know that we need to make time and for prayer and Bible study every single day. And we know that some days we may not get that done. But it has to be our goal. We need to make obedience to God a priority in our lives and improve every single day. Just staying here and sitting down and buckling your seatbelt and waiting for the ride isn't good enough. Just staying where we're at isn't good enough. We have to grow. God expects us to grow. And He expects us to be obedient. He expects us to be 100% obedient. And that's very hard, we understand as humans, but that is our goal. Once and for all, we need to aim our sights at that. In all of your dealings with other people, all of your interactions, all of your conversations, we need to represent ourselves in a way that glorifies God. We need to get ourselves off the top of the list and put others ahead of us. Basically, what I'm saying is we need to make sure that our priorities are right. We need to avoid the, what about me? See, there's no question that we're going to have, that all of us have trials in our lives. Some of us are going through trials much more severe than others right now. And we're always going to have them as long as we live in Satan's world. We know that. We have God's holy days coming up, His spring holy days, His Passover, the days of unleavened bread, that we know signify a monumental part of God's plan. And it's now, a month and a half, as we're kind of getting late started on this if we haven't yet, but we have to start looking at ourselves. We have to make ourselves properly prepared for that Passover time. We need to understand that we have a part in God's plan, and if we're going to be there, that we need to change, that we need to adjust. And we have a sticker, something on our refrigerator says, you may not be able to control the direction of the wind, but you can adjust your sails. And I like that, you know? Need to adjust our sails. See, there will be a time when Satan won't be here, and we won't have that influence, and him pushing these thoughts to have pity parties. But that's not here yet. That's a joyous time that we're all going to look forward to. But until then, we need to buck up. We need to eliminate the woe is me attitude. And I need to stop having the pity parties. I'd ask that you stop and look around yourself at all your blessings and to really think about that and pay attention to the things that others go through every day of their lives that are far worse than some of our issues. I could read you hundreds of stories of people that I work with. I've worked with over the years, who have endured things that I don't even want to talk about. They're so bad. What we need to understand in closing here is that we are going to have trials. They're not going to go away until Satan is removed. But we have to get in our minds that every single day is a special gift from God. Every day. And while life might not always be fair, we have to decide and come to grips with it, to never allow the pains and the hurdles and the handicaps of the moment to poison our attitudes and our plans for ourselves and our future. Because we have a wonderful future. We need to understand that we can never win when we wear the ugly cloak of self-pity, and the sour sound of whining will certainly frighten away any opportunity for success. There is a better way. How do your troubles compare to others? Let's look at one more scripture in closing, as we close it, wrap up here. Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 15. The next time that you think or have the thought, what about me? Think of this scripture, please. Colossians 3 verse 15. It says, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful." So the next time in the future you see me having my own pity party, please politely refuse to join me, and instead gently show me a better way, guide me to a different path.